From the latest hip hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. Now, I know it's been several weeks since you guys have heard my voice. I took about a two-week break, as I had mentioned on my last live episode, just to kind of sort some things through, to kind of, you know, regain my sanity, and just to really give myself a break, right? I haven't really felt like I've had a real break since COVID happened about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. And I really feel like I needed to kind of reset a little bit. I had thought about taking more time away from the station and just from a couple other things. But the truth is that there's so many things going on. And I'm like, I cannot let these opportunities of commentary go by, right? So here I am, back in the mix, ready to kind of go full steam ahead a little bit. I can say that there will not be another break in the horizon, but I wanted to get back in the swing of things because I also missed you guys. So in my 2 week absence, there has been so many things going on in these streets. It's crazy. And so we're going to try to tackle some of the topics and some of the things on today's show, but there really isn't enough time. There's just been so many things taking place. I mean, right now, the main thing that's been on my mind and on the mind of many is the Haitian earthquake, right? The earthquake that took place just last Saturday. We are what? It's been maybe 9 days now. So very fresh, very raw. And there's a lot going on down there. There's a lot going on in the States with organizations and individuals trying to mobilize strategically and effectively on how to really deliver aid and really create sustainable paths for these affected areas in Haiti. I think that the first earthquake that took place in 2010 really was an eye opener for many. And I think that this time around, many people are skeptical, obviously, of donating. They're skeptical of lending their assistance. But things are a little more crazy because there's COVID. Delta is percolating in these streets. The Haitian president was recently assassinated. It's been a little over a month now. And there's a lot of instability. So we're going to talk about some of these things on how you can actually lend your assistance and what really needs to be done when it comes to Haiti. So we'll talk about that later on in the show. We're going to talk about the New York City. I keep saying keys to the city, but I guess it's the pass to the city, the New York City access, NYC access pass that was recently put into effect only a few days ago, really, right? August 16th, I think, is when de Blasio stated that this would go in circulation, but I think it's September 13th is when it's really going to be in force. So right now, businesses have a little time to get things going, to prepare themselves for what may come. There's a lot of uncertainty around what this New York City access pass will do for the economy, will do to individuals. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, the pros and the cons, and kind of get a gauge of how people have been feeling so far with respect to this. And then obviously we have our preliminaries. I know you guys have missed the preliminaries, so we're definitely going to get into that as well today. But I just wanted to take a few moments at this time to remember those who have passed in the recent Haitian earthquake, and for those who are really going through it right now. There was a lot of devastation, a lot of damage. A lot of people are homeless. A lot of people are hungry. A lot of people are injured. And as we are trying to, you know, send down appropriate aid and really kind of get that situation under control, let's take a moment of silence for those individuals who have passed and are currently suffering through these crazy conditions. All right, so we are going to move forward now to the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
I'm on fleek, lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is chaos agent. So chaos agent is defined as a person or people that purposefully causes chaos or mischief within a group for the sake of entertainment. Example, yo, she just outed Brian and left. She's such a freaking chaos agent. Now, many of us have these individuals within our networks, right? And some even in our circles. And although there are times where these chaos agents provide a source of comedic relief for all of us, we do have to be careful about them, right? Because their main motivation for causing this chaos is for entertainment. And a lot of us may think that we're shielded from this, right? They're talking about other people. They're causing chaos in other people's lives. But there usually comes a day where the chaos agent strikes at you, right? And so I think that as we are talking, we've been talking about moving forward, mental health, mental wellness, mindfulness, peace, tranquility, getting rid of the toxins in our lives, i.e. toxic people, friends, family. Sometimes we get caught up in this entertainment thing and we just love to be entertained and we keep toxic people around just for the sake of that. We need to also get rid of those individuals. They might not have necessarily been toxic to you, but at some point they will. I truly believe that if somebody is toxic in general, if they are toxic by nature, even though you might have not had a turn yet, you have not felt their wrath, the day will come where you will too. So I think that, you know, and sometimes I feel like I've been guilty of it. You keep people around that are like hilarious, they're funny, you know, even though they might be poking fun or, you know, laughing at somebody else's expense, it's hilarious. So you jump in on the bandwagon. We've all been subject to this, right? But I think that as we are getting older, and one of my friends, we had a very intense conversation the other day about adult friendships, right? There's friendships and then there's adult friendships. And I think that as we are trying to move forward into a more positive and stable lifestyle for ourselves, I think coronavirus and this whole COVID pandemic has definitely taught us the importance of just being even keel. We need to start eradicating these individuals out of our lives. Yes, we might be, you know, lacking in the entertainment business, but is it really entertainment if we are laughing at other people's expenses, right? So I think that we should definitely reevaluate our circles and figure out who these chaos agents are and eradicate them from our lives. Because maybe that bold move of removing these people from your lives might actually create a change in them. So that is the word or phrase of the week from the Urban Dictionary, chaos agent. So it is now time for our Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week. So this week's Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week is tremblement de terre. Tremblement de terre means earthquake. And again, we have recently experienced a tragic earthquake in Haiti. And so a lot of people might be hearing this term. They might be seeing this phrase, and they have no idea exactly what tremblement de terre means when people are referring to it. Well, tremblement de terre means earthquake. It is literally trembling of the ground. Tremblement de terre. So this week's big up of the week, and happy moments of the week, actually, goes to the Black community. You guys know that here and there we do a general big up to the Black community for solidarity in times of trouble. So I don't know if you guys were aware of the story of the young woman, Saisha Mercado, who is well known for being a contestant on American Idol, and her partner, Tyrone Diener. This story actually started unraveling in March of 2021. So this young woman, Saisha Mercado, and her partner, Tyrone Diener, have a son called Amen Ra. They call him Ra for short. In about March of 2021, Saisha had went to the hospital with her son because he was experiencing some issues, and she took him there for fluids while she was transitioning from breastfeeding to the bottle. So a lot of women, you know, who have had children have experienced this situation, right? I don't say a phenomenon, but this little occurrence where when you're trying to wean your child off of the breast milk and transition them to the bottle, it's usually difficult, especially if you have what I call stubborn babies, where they're used to the breast or they're used to the type of milk. They oftentimes will refuse any other type of nourishment. And this is what happened to her. So identifying the fact that her child was not wanting to eat, she took the child to the hospital to get fluids, right? Little did she know that by taking her child to the hospital to get him the assistance necessary, that she would end up in a situation where the Child Protective Services would essentially forcefully take their child, place that child into foster care. The reason that the Child Protective Services stated or claimed that they took this child from the mother was that there was a tip, I guess, I'm assuming from the hospital, that the child was malnourished. They also stated that the parents refused the child to receive a B12 shot. And they claimed that this administering of the B12 shot was a life and death matter. Mercado and her partner said that this is absolutely untrue, that they never refused a B12 shot at no point. And also, there was never a point where the hospital indicated to them that their 18-month-old child was on the verge of death. So this whole situation has been crazy from day one. And many are saying that this is the problem, particularly with Florida, right? But a lot of counties where the parents are not necessarily given the opportunity to establish what they consider to be right and wrong for their kids. Now, I understand on the Child Protective Services, you know, angle that we can't let parents have 100% autonomy over their children, because there are parents who have abused their children, who are abusing their kids and do not know what's right and wrong. But I think the problem that America and many have with respect to this situation with the Mercados and the Deniers is that there was not really a real investigation that really took place with respect to this incident. I mean, it's not far-fetched at all that the child would refuse bottle feeding when they were used to breastfeeding for 18 months, right? It's also a little uncharacteristic, many are saying that, or maybe it's not uncharacteristic, but it seemed, you know, outside of protocol for the Child Protective Services to place this, to rip this child from his parents at such a baby age without any real investigation done as to the health and well-being of this child, and to place this child into foster care without even looking to see if there are any family members that could have housed this child first, right? Before going to potential or going to strangers. So the handling of this matter has been very traumatic, obviously, for Saisha and her partner, who are first-time parents. Now, many of you would think that the story would end there, that, okay, they have their son, Ra, who is still in the custody of strangers, and they're working to get this child back, right? No. Saisha was actually pregnant with their second child, their daughter, Ast, or Asat, I think is how they pronounce it. This child, only days, right? I think it was days, or maybe let's just be a little more conservative. I think it might have been within maybe 2 weeks, but nonetheless, a newborn baby, was ripped out of the arms of her mother and her father. And I remember seeing the video. The parents, Saisha and Tyrone, were in their car driving. They were pulled over by state police. Apparently, there was a warrant of some sort, and to come get this child, because there was another, I guess, tip or feeling of endangerment of this newborn baby. What happened here is that Saisha had a home birth. I don't know 100% what the real conversation was around this, but there was this sentiment that this child as well was not receiving proper assistance, proper medical care, was brought into this world through home birth, and that these are like, as I'm considering it, radical Black people, right, who are taking matters into their own hands, who are, you know, doing these holistic practices that are putting their children in harm's way. So the Department of Families and Children Services decided, we're going to take this baby as well too. This baby that was still breastfeeding, this baby that was fresh out the womb, ripped this child from the arms of her mother. And it was so tragic because Tyrone, the father, was documenting this experience live on video as it was taking place. So to see the heartbreak, right, from these parents was heartbreaking to me. And so from then, the community has rallied around these two. There are GoFundMes that were set up so that they can get the best lawyers to fight this injustice. And they recently reported that their baby girl has been reunited with them. And they said that it would not have happened had it not been for the community at large rallying against, you know, rallying with them to get their child back. And so this is just one of the many, many, many examples and the many instances of what we can do as a community when we put our minds together, when we put our resources together, and when we stand together in unity. You know, I've reported on several occasions incidences, you know, not necessarily exactly like this, but incidences where the community came together and changes were made expeditiously. And so I just want to just remind you all of the power that we have as a community. Do we fuss and fight? Of course we do. Are there issues of unity at times when it comes to business and when it comes to money? Of course there is, right? And hopefully one day we can get to a point where there can be true unity across the board. But until that time happens, let's just remember how much power we have and how changes can be made when we put our minds together. So if we see these occurrences take place, these injustices take place, remember that we do have the power to make changes. And I'm so happy that this family is partially reunited. Right now, they're still working to get their 18-month-old son, Ra, back. They're still fighting. They do not have the custody of their son yet. Which is still very traumatic, obviously, but at least they have the baby girl back and they are working tirelessly to get their son back. And I believe that they will. I believe that because of our efforts in making this story go viral, they were able to see certain steps being taken in the right direction when it comes to justice. So big up to you guys, the Black community, for doing, you know, for putting yourselves out there, making this story go viral. I even received petitions from various friends with regards to this. So we really did our thing, and let's continue to support this family and let's continue to work with them so that they can be fully united with their son, Ra. So you guys know that with every high, there is a low. And this week's low goes to the lieutenant governor of Texas. Texas is, I would say, at least five times a year, Texas is implicated in some sort of womp womp of the week, some sort of tomfoolery that we report on this platform. If it's not Texas, it's Florida. Florida's on the chopping block, too, because of DeSantis and his mask ban in schools. But we can talk about that at another time. Today, we're going to talk about Lieutenant Governor of Texas, who declared publicly on a Fox News platform that the coronavirus spread is primarily due to, you know, the fact that there are unvaccinated Black people rolling around in these streets. So he essentially blamed the issue of the issue of COVID spread, the Delta variant spread, on African-Americans who have not been vaccinated. And this story was taken from the Washington Post. So Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is clearly under scrutiny, clearly under a lot of criticism for his statement. And it's quite interesting because the Washington Post provided some details and some statistics around what Patrick was trying to say, and basically saying that his assertions are false, right? The latest data, according again to the Washington Post from the Texas Department of State Health Services, shows that Black residents only account for 16.4% of coronavirus cases and 10% of deaths from the disease, while only comprising 13% of the state's population. So we're talking about very, very, very low numbers, very low percentages here. For a state that is primarily comprised of white people, these numbers that I just quoted can you know, essentially give you the picture of what is actually taking place in Texas. So it was very irresponsible of him to come out and essentially state that African Americans who have not been vaccinated are the driving force. I believe that was the actual quote, the driving force behind the COVID surge. Ironically enough, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick was reported to have contracted the COVID virus, the coronavirus, despite being vaccinated himself. And we all know from the CDC and the World Health Organization and all of these reports as of late that vaccinated people can not only catch the virus, but they can spread the virus as well too, right? So again, this is not a way to say, you know, don't get vaccinated. We're not talking about getting vaccinated, not getting vaccinated. We're talking about the irresponsible comments of Lieutenant Governor Patrick in essentially accusing the African-American population of unvaccinated individuals for being the driving force behind the COVID surge. Are we shocked about these statements coming from these Republican governors and political officials? Of course not. Of course not. I mean, there's always a ploy to cast the Black community into negative lights in these particular jurisdictions, right? We're not shocked about it. We're not shocked about it at all, but this is what's happening in these streets. And, you know, this is where a lot of the hate crimes stem from, right? I know that you guys remember what happened to the Asian community when the coronavirus first touched base here. Individuals were attacking the Asian community, attacking members of the Asian community because they blamed them for spreading coronavirus in the United States and abroad, right? So by Lieutenant Dan Patrick making these statements and essentially blaming the Black community for the surge of the coronavirus, one would, you know, make the assumption that this is going to be bringing forth more hate crimes towards the Black community, right? Because if you're in Texas and, you know, there's a surge of coronavirus and your leader is saying that it's the Black people that are the cause of this surge, I can almost guarantee that there's going to be some sort of linkage in the increase of hate crimes towards African Americans because of this statement. So this is where the irresponsibility part is. I know many people might not agree and say, well, you know, black people that are unvaccinated need to get vaccinated. And so therefore him saying that, you know, is just calling out what it is. But it's not. We have to look deeper and we have to be more critical when we're thinking about these things, right? Especially when we're talking about information that's coming out of these Republican states from these Republican, officials. So he gets the womp womp of the week because of the irresponsibility of this particular statement and what it can lead to, right? So that's that. So we're now heading on to the meat of the show. So today I had stated that we were going to talk a little bit about the New York City access to the city. I keep saying keys to the city initiative program that Mayor de Blasio put into place effective August 16th, but to be fully enforced by September 13th. So essentially what this, and I can never get it right, New York City access pass gives you. If you are vaccinated, you will be allowed to enter into venue spaces, indoor venue spaces. You will be allowed to enter indoor dining spaces, and you will be allowed to partake in indoor gyms. So essentially what it means, I guess if we really want to get down to it, if you are not vaccinated, you cannot go to the gym. If it's indoor, you cannot go and experience indoor dining. You cannot go to any indoor entertainment venues. And this is only some of the things, right? I am anticipating that there will be more restrictions as time goes on and as September 13th approaches, to see how many individuals have ran and got vaccinated, you know, due to these restrictions. And I think that that's going to be the marker for how we move forward. Will there be more restrictions after September 13th, or will there be a pullback, or will we just be, you know, at this point where there is this New York City access pass? And, you know, we're just going to move forward status quo. If you're vaccinated, you're good. If you're not vaccinated, you cannot go to these places. I understand the initiative because if you are restricted, some people don't want to be restricted from eating indoors. Some people don't want to be restricted from anything. And some people were on the fence of getting the vaccine, not because they had a real moral reason or a medical reason or a religious reason. Some people were just on the fence because they just, you know, they were like, I don't really need to get it. They didn't really have any basis for their objection or rejection of the vaccine. So the idea is that, you know, many people will now go and get it because a lot, I guess naturally people just don't want to be restricted by anything, right? But then there is the group of individuals who stands firm and say, I don't need to eat indoors. I don't need to go to anybody's gym because I wasn't going to anybody's gym even before this mandate. And I don't care about going into concerts and venues and Broadway and all this other stuff. I plan to stay my ass at home because Delta is real and Lambda is also percolating. And I don't want to be around crowds anyways. So I don't mind staying home and not partaking in these social, you know, gatherings. So it is going to be interesting because there are those who find that this aggressive action, or I guess they characterize it as this aggressive action by the mayor's office to regulate this, I guess, individuals and what they can and cannot do and enforcing this vaccine is some sort of infringement, right, of civil liberties, civil rights, and all these other things. Is it? I don't know, to be very honest. Is it? I mean, there is a choice. Your choice can be to stay your ass at home and not go to the gym. And if you would like to go to the gym and if you feel like you need it, then you do what you need to do to participate. I mean, that's essentially where we are headed, right? If you don't want to participate, that's fine. But if you do want to participate, these are the things that you need to do to get that done. So I am going to be interested in seeing how this really plays out in New York City. I have seen reports that there are other cities who are following suit that are also implementing this first in the nation access to the city, access to the world pass or whatever. But we'll look to see, you know, realistically how this moves forward, because we are already seeing protests from the restaurant community. We are already seeing protests from, you know, I think there were even a couple of gyms that have also sent letters. Because what does this mean? We're restricting business, right? For these businesses, we're restricting their cash flow. We are about to go back into the winter season, right? Outdoor dining has been amazing for the summer. A lot of restaurants have been able to capitalize on it and to make up for losses of 2020. So not only do they have their indoor dining, but because they have created these outdoor dining spaces, they're able to accommodate more people. So they're able to bring in more money, right? But now as we move to these restrictions, yes, the outdoors will still be open, but for how long? Once we start getting into chilly mode and to winter, there's only going to be an indoor dining experience. And I'm not sure if the indoor dining by that time will be able to operate in 100% capacity, or maybe they might get reduced again to 50% or 25% capacity. And then from that particular group, we're only allowed to sit those who can present a vaccine card or can, you know, present their vaccination status from an app. So businesses are already seeing how this could negatively impact their business, because now we're only talking about a certain select group of people that they have to rely on to frequent their business so that they can make money. So it will be very interesting to see how all of this plays out. When it comes to healthcare, I don't know if this was actually part of the NYC Access Plan, but there's been a lot more restrictions since that. At one point, the healthcare institutions and facilities in New York City, many of them were giving their employees the option of either getting vaccinated or submitting to weekly COVID testing. But as of this week, this is no longer an option. All healthcare employees within these hospitals, nursing homes. I know that there was some debate over home care, but at least for nursing homes and hospitals, all hospital staff must be vaccinated. And I believe they need to be vaccinated by September 27th. So, you know, the restrictions are getting, you know, much stricter. And it's understandable to an extent, because, I mean, COVID is percolating its wings and spreading its wings even more so. And we have many from the vaccinated community that are getting COVID, are ending up in the hospital. And we have many from the unvaccinated community as well, too, that are in the hospital and are having a hard time with it. And, you know, we are seeing it's almost a replay of March 2020 or April 2020, when we were hearing this celebrity has COVID and that celebrity has COVID and this person has COVID. So we're seeing Jesse Jackson right now and his wife are in the hospital, I believe in Texas, with COVID. Both, at least I don't know about both, but at least Jesse Jackson is vaccinated and he's in the hospital. And so we're seeing a lot of these things resurface and they're back to the forefront. Now, with all this being said, with all of these restrictions and these guidelines and just this news of just people every day catching COVID and people dying of COVID and people being hospitalized with COVID, we have to, again, maintain our mental health, right? We need to gain our sanity. We need to be informed. to an extent, but we also need to know when we've overloaded our senses with this information. Particularly for me, I have what I consider, and I think it might be a real thing, I have COVID anxiety. And it's more so because I've had it before, like, and I'm still dealing with off and on residual symptoms till this day. And I had it at the end of April, and we are in the month of August. We are approaching the end of August. So it's been several months, and I'm still on a road to recovery. Although, thank God, I am doing so much better. I think that I have, in the last couple of weeks, I've done so much better. There were some of the residual occurrences that have had happened maybe once or twice and not as often as it was before. So I definitely am on a road to recovery. But I have this COVID anxiety in which if I go to any type of event, even if I have my mask on, once I come home, I believe that I have somehow contracted COVID. And my throat, if I have a sore throat, if I have a little cough, even my body is on this, you have COVID mode. And I then must go and get some sort of COVID testing to assuage my fears and the anxiety that's surrounded around that. And I have heard other people talk about it. But as I'm speaking to you now, I've been out in the streets, not popping and locking in the streets, not being reckless in the streets with my mask, but there were certain things that I needed to attend. And even though I have probably no reason to believe that anything is happening with me, I, at this moment, have a sore throat, even though I do sleep with the AC and I got caught a little bit in the rain last night. I am still reliving the first days of when I had gotten COVID the last time. And I'm like, oh my God, I had this sore throat. Oh my God. It started with a little cough here, a little clearing of the throat. And then it was it. And because I had it so bad the last time, this idea that if I catch it again or if I get it again, it's literally driving me insane. And so this COVID anxiety thing is real. And so I just want to, encourage you guys to be mindful that it is important to be engaged. It is important to be in the know of things, but to protect your mental health. If you are somebody like me who experiences COVID anxiety, limit your interactions with the public, limit your interactions with the street. Like, I plan on going nowhere this week because I need to ground myself. And I am actually looking forward for winter, for that fall and winter when nobody is doing anything, when there's no requirements to really leave your house, so that I can, so that I can live peacefully, right? But then it's going to be very interesting to see how far this pass goes, especially since we're going to be having a new mayor come January. Will Mayor-elect Eric Adams continue the shenanigans of Mayor de Blasio? Will he take it up a notch? We don't know. So there's a lot of uncertainty in these streets. But I just encourage you guys to just keep yourselves grounded and do what you need to do to keep yourself safe. There is a lot of peer pressure out here to be out and to do things and to do this and to do that. Figure out what you want for yourself. Figure out what you need. Figure out what makes the best sense for you. So the last thing I'm going to talk about today, and this is not going to be the longest episode. I mean, I say that all the time, and who knows? Maybe we will reach the hour, maybe we won't. But I want to talk about the Haiti relief efforts that are happening right now, the earthquake relief efforts, right? So again, for many of you who may not be aware, Haiti was once again struck by a earthquake, 7.2 magnitude this time. So it's actually 0.2 more intense than the earthquake that took place in 2010. Now, this earthquake hit the southernmost part of Haiti. The epicenters, because it kind of varies, but it's within that Okai area. I can't remember the name of the town, but it's essentially where people are considering to be the epicenter, is near the Okai area in Haiti, which is in the southern department There's different departments, just like in America, we have, you know, states, we have different areas, we have different jurisdictions. So it's kind of the same thing. We have different districts. So the Southern Department, Département Sud, is where the epicenter essentially, took place with respect to this earthquake that happened around 9-ish in the morning. Last Saturday, so very early, people were in their homes. People were probably still sleeping or at least getting ready for the day when this thing took place. And a lot of devastation has, you know, come out of this, right? I mean, there has been many deaths. Thank God, not as many deaths as the 2010 earthquake, but there have been a lot of deaths reported. From this tragic event, there are, God knows, how many homes destroyed. I mean, in some towns, we're talking about 3,000 homes destroyed. In other towns, 1,000 homes destroyed. And these are complete destructions. We're not even talking about the damage that has been done, right? So actually, you know, I love to clarify myself even on air. So at around 8:29 a.m. last Saturday, August 14th, is when the 7.2 earthquake struck Haiti, right? And so again, the epicenter, there's always some debate as to where the epicenter took place, but it was actually near the Petit Trou de Nip department, not necessarily the Département du Sud, but because of all, you know, all of these places are kind of like connected. Obviously, this is an earthquake. Shockwaves were even felt all the way in Port-au-Prince, allegedly. So the damage was widespread. If you ask me, it was widespread, and I think many are calling it a widespread disaster. So it's not necessarily just this particular area of Okai that was affected. There are other areas in the departments nearing and bordering that were severely, severely, severely impacted. Right. So Petit Trou de Nip's department is where my family is primarily from, in Barra de Haiti. And that particular town, that particular area, has been severely damaged. The official report that I had received the day after was about 1,000 homes destroyed, about 500 homes across, if not more, actually damaged. And this is as of the day after. So imagine a week later, we're discovering more and more damage. And I don't know if they have updated the report, but there were hundreds upon hundreds of individuals who were injured due to the earthquake. And again, at the time, I think there was about 50 known deaths. That number could have definitely increased as we are a week later, right? But just to say that there's damage, there's widespread damage, widespread casualties in these areas in Haiti. So many are asking, you know, how can we assist? How do we not repeat the issues and the mistakes, rather, of 2010? There's a lot of hesitancy around donating to this Haitian earthquake, right? Because of what took place in 2010. And that is understandable. That is understandable. Red Cross, we have no words for them. Some of these other organizations that took money, Clinton Foundation, we have no words for you, right? We don't have words for many of these. And there is a strong sentiment from the community to not persuade, these words be, you know, they my mind sometimes I can't grasp certain things, but to discourage people to donate to these organizations, these well-known organizations with very, very high overhead fees, right? Because with the amount of money that was sent to Haiti for the earthquake, the first earthquake, it's baffling to many how only 6 homes were kind of built with that, right? How much did it cost to build these homes? And what kind of homes are we talking about? Palaces? Like what, you know, what is happening here, right? So with that being said, there are a number of organizations that have formulated as of late or that has been doing the work in Haiti that are asking for donations in kind and, you know, monetary, right? And even with that, people are wondering, well, how do we know which one's going to be good? How do we know which one's not a family business? How do we know? So there are organizations that that are reputable and that have people on the ground and that have been working in Haiti, you know, despite disaster, but have you know, real initiatives in Haiti. One of the organizations that I've worked with in the past is a healthcare organization in Haiti. It's called CapraCare, C-A-P-R-A. Care, C-A-R-E, right? They're an organization that's actually based in Okai, Lekai. So Lekai is, I guess, the formal way, but Okai is, you know, what, you know, the native Haitians call it. But in Lekai, I guess. And they have a health organization there. They provide screenings for women, cervical cancer screenings and things of that nature. They have youth initiative programs in the community. They do a lot in terms of the healthcare world, right? And they're established down there and they're doing what they can as an organization to meet the needs, right? Because there's a lot of casualties, there's a lot of injured. Again, we're talking about individuals who have lost their home, so they're sleeping in the streets. And so there's a lot of effort and a lot of work being done for this cause in this particular area. There's also Hope for Haiti. I am not 100% familiar with Hope for Haiti. I've known their name. I've heard their name. I've heard people talk about them. They're apparently a reputable organization. I do have friends who are collecting funds on their behalf, and that's great as well, too. My concern and where I am taking a different approach, because many of you have asked me personally, you know, what are you doing? Because I have done disaster relief work in Haiti. I was there after the first earthquake. I was there after Hurricane Matthew. And so we've partnered with organizations to provide aid. And we've been planning on sustainable measures in certain areas of Haiti. So these are not things that I'm not familiar with. My entire thesis and work in grad school was on medical humanitarianism and disaster stricken areas, Haiti being the main focus of my studies. And so it's very intricate work and it's very delicate work. And it does take a lot of collaboration for things to really get done. You know, many can study disaster relief and emergency preparedness and things like that. But it's a different situation when you actually have to be on the ground. Every country is different. So even if you did work in one country, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are fully equipped to do aid in another country. So I'm saying all this to say this. Donations in kind and monetary donations are necessary. Definitely research the organizations that people are telling you to donate to before just giving your money, right? See what they've done before. And if it may be, if this is the first time they're doing things, because we can't knock organizations or people who have the ability to go down and do work for the first time, right? But find out who they're partnered with. Who are they connecting with? You know, how are they, like, what is their plan, right? So for me personally, I am committed to the area of Barade, Haiti, because that is where the majority of my family are from. And because I've been there and I've done the work and I've seen with my eyes what needs to be done. And this was even after the hurricane, right? And they're still rehabilitating after the hurricane that happened 5 years ago. And here we now have an earthquake that kind of like undid whatever little work they could have done and have caused even more damage. So the situation is very dire because I'm in communication with them, with Haiti, with Barade at least once a day with respect to what their needs are. What they actually need is important to understand. Not what we think that they need, but what they actually need. And coordinating efforts on how to get the basic emergent necessities down to these individuals. Because what we're seeing with these fundraising events and these initiatives is that they are all going to one area. They're all going to what the popular area is, Okai. Some are going to Jérémie. There is a number of areas, towns, that are not receiving any assistance because people either don't know that, you know, they need assistance, because, again, people are jumping on bandwagons. All right, let's send all our stuff in one particular area. And it's causing a lot of frustrations. We have seen, I know there's this video that's being circulated with the camions, these trucks, you know, from Port-au-Prince driving in through some of these other areas to go to Okai. And these trucks are filled with food, supplies, and everything. And we've seen the videos of these locals, right, in the neighboring towns, hijacking these trucks and taking the materials. Many would say these people are savage. This is why we can't do nothing in Haiti. But if you understand, if you are an affected area, meaning you, the earthquake affected you too, you lost your home, there are deaths, there are bodies waiting to be buried, there are people that are injured, there's no food, there's no water, right? Because a lot of the water sources have been compromised. They're watching truckloads of supplies that they too need pass their area because they all have the destination of Okai. It does not surprise me that somebody was like, listen, if we don't take a stand and get some of this aid, we are going to die because nobody is coming for us. They're only going to one area. So, you know, people have been showing those videos in a way to discourage aid, but it shouldn't be a way to discourage aid. What we need to do as a diaspora collectively, and not just the New York City Haitians and sympathizers that are wanting to do something for Haiti, there needs to be a collective effort to figure out how are we going to provide aid to all of these affected areas, right? How do we touch areas that's not just what's being said on the news? Areas that might be even more severely impacted than areas that people are going to. How do we do that? And I think that aligning yourselves with organizations that have this greater goal in mind is also what's important. I have people who have reached out to me who were like, hey, my family is in the NIPS department too. Is there a way that we can work together collectively to get assistance to these areas that everybody else is bypassing or people are not aware of? Because she told me the name of her town and I was like, I never heard of that town in my life. But then when I looked at the map, I'm like, oh, you're only an hour away or 2 hours away from where my family is from. On the way, right? So their coordinated efforts can happen. The other thing to be mindful of is that, you know, after the first earthquake, people were running down to Haiti. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm running down there. I'm going to go down there because I need to go down there. We have to be mindful that these are different times, right? The disaster is a disaster, yes. There's instability even around that, right? But then we're talking about coronavirus, COVID. COVID is another barrier for many, right? Although people are saying there's not much COVID in Haiti, there's very few cases. That could be the case, but we're still in a global pandemic, right? People are traveling in these international hubs. Things are being spread. So we have to be mindful of that. We have to be mindful of the fact that these gangs have really upped the ante when it comes to Haiti, right? So there's the fear of the gangs hijacking people. Apparently there were doctors that were kidnapped in the effort as of recent, right? The recent assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, may his soul rest in peace. That is also a factor because we're talking about political instability in a country that essentially has no president right now. Right? So there are a lot of different factors. So my advice to anybody who is saying, oh, I want to go down there, because there are people who are like, I got to get down there. There's whole departments and divisions who are like, oh, I got to get down there. But what exactly is your plan? And something that I focused a lot about in my research and during my master's thesis and studies with respect to ethics, global ethics and humanitarian relief, is that there has to be an understanding and there has to be a respect for the structures, for the protocols, and for the people of Haiti when we are talking about going down there and providing what we believe is aid and assistance, right? People going down there saying that they're going to serve as security for these individuals who are trying to deliver aid, you might want to rethink that, right? Because the police departments there themselves are not getting involved in a lot of these things. Some may even be involved in some of the corruption. There's a lot more that people don't understand. And so sometimes we get down to these areas, you know, with our imperialism, and we go down there and we're like, yes, this is how things need to be done. This is how we need to organize. This is how we need to X, Y, and Z. And that's not necessarily the case, right? Our way is completely wrong because it doesn't take into account the values, the mores, the customs or whatever of the actual, not just the country, but even that specific town. Different areas have different protocols, right? And different areas might have different customs and different ways to do things. So we have to be mindful of that. And so I say all that to say this. There's a lot to say when it comes to Haiti relief. How can we help? Going back to the original question, how can you help? You can help by donations in kind. There are organizations that are going down there that are asking for clothing. There are asking for hygiene supply, you know, hygiene, feminine hygiene, baby products, first aid kits, medical kits, things like that, right? There are organizations asking for money. And it would be important to know, well, what do you need? What are you going to be using this money for? So, for example, my coalition, my team that's working primarily with Barade and potentially working with some of the nearby towns, we are going to be collecting items in kind, the emergent items to send down there, hopefully within the next week or two. But we are also collecting funds, because we are going to be working with the local, contacts down there to get food locally in Haiti, as opposed to shipping, boxes and boxes of water. There are potable water companies down there that we can work with to get these, necessities down to the people much more quickly, right? So just be mindful. Ask the questions. You're allowed to ask questions. It's your money. You want to make sure that the money that you are giving is going to do what the people say that it's going to do, right? So those are some of the ways that you can get involved. Donations in kind, donation by money. And if you do have a particular skill set, whether it be engineering, whether it be social work, right? Right now, I do think that it's important that not only just emergency medical professionals or those trained in emergency medicine should go down there, social workers and mental health professionals who work in the area of trauma should also be making trips down there to assist individuals down there through their trauma, right? Because we all know that is all connected. Your mental health can create physical ailments, can cause physical issues, right? So doing that, I think that this is a long road ahead. The rebuilding is going to take some time. And so if you have skill sets that could contribute to the rebuilding of these homes and of these communities, planning, finding an organization or creating a team that can plan to go down within the next couple of months, right? When there's a strategic plan in place, will be very, very beneficial. The diaspora wants to help. And many times they don't know how to help or they're discouraged. But this unfortunate situation is another opportunity that arises in how there can be, you can assist in the long-term sustainability of these country, of this country and of these townships and of these areas. My thing is always, find a town and adopt it. Adopt a town, work with the organizations in this town and rebuild the town. This whole generalization of let's just help Haiti, a lot of times money gets lost. Efforts get lost. And 10 years later, we're still at the same position, right? On how do we help? How do we assist? How do we provide? So there's a lot of work that's going to be done. I do encourage you guys to follow Black Ivy Media, follow my I Am Rita Pierre, R-I-T-H-A, follow According to RP, just to look to see some of the efforts that I personally will be doing with respect to Barade. We will be doing a fundraiser September 19th in collaboration with Brooklyn Commons. We will be planning a group of individuals at some point to go down there to actually start work. And we have long-term goals that we had already been talking about for the last 5 years, on how to make, you know, some of these areas sustainable. Little Haiti BK, I started an initiative there called DREP, the Disaster Relief Emergency Preparedness, which is being led by Mona Lisa Ferrari, in partnership with the political officials, the Councilwoman Farrah Lewis's office, Assemblywoman Rodney's Bichotte's office, and some of the other political officials, Senator Chuck Schumer. And that committee is going to be the committee to work with respect to facilitating disaster relief and emergency preparedness protocols and whatnot in Haiti. Right now, there's a lot of, you know, different organizations, different people, different everything's happening. And a lot of people find that, you know, we're just running in circles. So this committee was established to kind of be the point organization, the point committee, to address a lot of these issues so that things are actually happening, right? I think people are afraid that there's so much going on in terms of the collection, but what is actually taking place? What will actually take place? And so this is one initiative to try to resolve, to try to answer that question and try to resolve some of these issues that we have faced from the last few disasters, right? So definitely look out for any information with regarding DREP, DREP, Disaster Relief Emergency Preparedness Committee, which is a Little Haiti BK initiative. If you are interested in being part of any of these initiatives, whether it be DREP, whether it be working specifically with our coalition that will be formalized soon into a 501c3 organization to help create sustainable initiatives in Barade, Haiti, definitely send an email, send a DM. You could send the email to accordingtorp@gmail.com. And if you just need some general advice with respect to, well, you know, I'm a doctor. Do you know any doctors organizations? I'm an accountant. I'm an engineer. I could definitely put you in the right direction and connect you to the people that are, you know, within those particular divisions and that are currently doing the work down there as well, too. So with that being said, everyone, I hope that you all have an amazing, amazing Sunday, despite Hurricane Henry that is really putting a damper, literally, on our moods and on our lives. But I really hope that you guys have an amazing week. And next week, we should have a special guest. Just look out for the post on According to RP on IG for who that guest might be and what we will be talking about. And with that being said, everyone, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.